It's not over there. I don't see it over there either. I'm just so flustered right now. I have looked all around my apartment and I cannot find where I have stored my cryptocurrency. And to make things even more confusing, my buddy told me that cryptocurrencies aren't even physical objects, and then he turns around and says that I need to get a wallet. How can I store something that's not even real inside of a wallet? Well, if you have questions about cryptocurrency storage, you have come to the right place because in today's video, I'll do my best to explain how cryptocurrencies are stored, especially when they aren't actually a physical object. Hey everyone and welcome. This is the Part-Time Economist, and in today's video, I'm going to do my best to answer the question, where is my cryptocurrency stored? Or to give the same question a little bit different flavor, how is cryptocurrency stored? Now, why are we even talking about this question? Cryptocurrency can be a little bit problematic for beginners to understand because we're used to storing physical things, right? If I have a car, I put it in my garage. If I have a dollar bill, I put it in my wallet. I can pull out my dollar bill, I can feel it, I can give it to someone else. I know where that dollar bill is. But cryptocurrency is a digital asset. It's something that doesn't really have a physical presence at all. So how can we store something that doesn't have a physical presence? And if you're thinking, oh, it's like a PDF file or a Word document, I can just put it on a drive, I can email it to someone, doesn't really work that way either, because unlike a PDF file or an Excel spreadsheet or even an MP4 movie or something like that, there really is no file that represents that cryptocurrency. Rather, cryptocurrency is more like a balance in your bank account. You might not actually physically have the cash in your wallet, but some entity out there somewhere says that you have $4,000 worth of money that you can spend, and that's going to be the key to understanding this as we go through. If you're a little bit confused right now, don't worry, because we're going to go into depth, we're going to explain everything, and I'm going to use a couple examples to make this a little bit more understandable. So, first off, I want you to think that you have three friends. We've got Alice, we've got Steven, and we've got Frederick. Now, all they use is physical cash. There's no credit cards, no debit cards, no banks, and every time they do a transaction, they literally have to trade physical cash. So Alice pays $500, maybe for some shoes. She owes $300 on her rent, and she donated $390 to a charity. Steven owes $200, but he paid $340. So we've got all these different transactions going on here, and because we're using physical cash, every time we do a transaction, we've got to actually transact in that physical cash. That's what we're used to thinking of, but there has to be an easier way to do this, right? Well, in reality, there is. And instead of keeping track of all of those different things and having to do physical cash, what we could do instead is we could just put our money in a bank and we could say, hey, whenever I spend something, just take this money out of my bank account and give it to whoever it needs to go to. And then at the end of the day, tell me how much money I have left. So what we're looking at is this concept of a ledger. And a ledger just basically keeps track of who owns what. So we've got Susan here, and Susan says, hey, how much do I own? And the bank says, you have $4,000. Now, Susan, in reality, might open up her pocketbook and find that she only has 50 cents in there, or a dollar, or $200. But because her money is at the bank, she has access to that $4,000. So this is where we're starting to get into talking about cryptocurrency a little bit, because even though she doesn't have that $4,000 in her physical possession, I think we could all agree that she still owns $4,000. And in reality, a bank isn't going to just have one customer. At least we would hope they have more than one customer. So let's say we've got Fred and Steve and Michael and Stacy and Randy. Now, each of those customers is going to have their own balance, and the bank is going to keep track of all of those customers. So if Fred wants to make a payment to Steve, he doesn't actually have to pull the money out of that account, give it to Steve, and then have Steve go to his bank and put it in there. That can all be done electronically. So there's a lot of advantages to keeping track over who owns what instead of actually physically transferring the possession of those dollar bills every single time that we want to make a trade. Now, one thing that I will say is that when we're talking about cryptocurrency, we don't really have a physical bank that we can go into. So we can't just walk in and say, hey, I'm Fred. give me all the money that's in Fred's account because Fred is me and that's my money. When we talk about cryptocurrency, we are represented by something that is known as a public key, or some people will call it a public address. So instead of saying, hey, my name is Fred and Fred has $4,000, what we do when we create a cryptocurrency account, a cryptocurrency wallet, we're really creating two separate addresses. We're creating a public address that says, hey, I am Fred. If you want to send Fred money, this is where you send it. And then we're creating a private address that what that does is allows us to send money. Don't worry, we'll get to that in the next slide. But you just need to know that in the world of cryptocurrency, there are no Freds, there are no Steves, there are no Stacys or Sallys. There are simply strings of letters and characters that correspond to those individuals. So one more thing about cryptocurrency. Let's suppose that we have a bank and we're still talking about that traditional cash, right? Where all these people have different accounts and they just write checks to each other. The bank is going to keep a record of that, but with cryptocurrency, it doesn't really work like that. There's no one central bank that says this is what everyone owns. Rather, the record of who owns what is stored on hundreds or thousands of different computers all over the world. And this can be good in some respects because think about a traditional bank. If that one bank has the record of how much you own and something happens to that bank, it's gone, right? Now, obviously there's protections and things like that built into the system to help us with that. But for the example, just assume there's one bank, something happens to it, and it's gone forever. Having this same ledger stored on multiple computers makes it better in that it's more resilient, right? If one computer goes offline, there's still 9,000 more computers that have a record of who owns what. However, it can also make things a little bit harder because we can't really go into a physical bank and say, hey, I'm Fred, give me my money, right? Because there is no physical bank. There's thousands of computers all over the world. So we're pretty far into the video and we still haven't answered the question, where is my cryptocurrency? Where is my money? I just want my money and I want it now. We're getting there. And would you agree with me that if we want to withdraw money from a traditional bank, we've already established that having money in a bank is the same as owning that money, correct? Because the bank says you have this much balance. You can basically control and exert influence over that, even though you don't have it in your physical possession. I think that's a fair statement. Now, once we've established that, we can say, well, how do we actually send funds from that? How do we actually do things with that money in a traditional bank? Well, we walk into the bank or we log in online and we give them our ID and we say, hey, I'm the part-time economist. Here's my ID that says I'm the part-time economist. So whatever assets, whatever credits are assigned to this account that you're calling the part-time economist, those are mine. Send them here, do whatever with these assets. Now, because we can't really do that in cryptocurrency, we have another way of doing this. So what I want you to think about is the ability to withdraw, control, and do things with that money is ownership. So when we think about cryptocurrency, we don't really just have an ID that says, I'm the part-time economist, do this. Instead, what we have is this concept known as public and private keys. So a public key is like our mailing address. So what I have here is I have a mailbox, and imagine you have a secure mailbox, right? It's not just one that someone can open up. It's kind of like those drop boxes that the UPS has, right? Or the mail. You put your letter in there and it's configured so that you can't get anything out of it. So people could send you checks, they could send you birthday cards, they could send you all of these cool things to your public address. We could call that your mailing address, right? So within cryptocurrency, when we say, where are you storing your cryptocurrency? Remember, there's really no storage. But here's the thing, your public address is where crypto comes to you. So let's suppose my public address is, again, remember, there are no Freds or Joes or Sallys within cryptocurrency, but there are strings of letters. So let's suppose mine is 00PTE for part-time economist. When someone sends me cryptocurrency, it's coming to that address and I can see, wow, 00PTE is getting all this cryptocurrency. And again, is it really getting cryptocurrency? No, it is not getting anything. Rather, on that system of ledgers, the balance for part-time economist, the system, the blockchain, if you want to call it that, is saying part-time economist now has access to 10 Bitcoin, Now, Part-Time Economist has access to 30 Bitcoin, right? So when people send us cryptocurrency, they're really just increasing the balance of our account on that distributed ledger. But how do we actually send that cryptocurrency? Well, to do this, we have to have the private key. Now, that can be thought of as a key to a safe, right? Because with the public key, or I actually prefer calling it the public address because it helps keep things clear, we can receive as much as we want, as long as we want. Anyone can send us stuff. But in order to get things out, in order to take things from that, to send it to other people, we need the private key. And that can be thought of the key to a safe or to get in your house, because in order to take things out, you need that private key. So remember when we said that the traditional example of a bank, and we said that the ability to withdraw, control those funds is the ownership of those funds? Which of these two here do you think gives us ownership of the funds, the public key or the private key? If you said the private key, you are absolutely correct, because the private key is the key that allows us to have ownership over those funds and transfer them out. So by now, what I want you to think about is, okay, this private key, it gives me the ability to transfer my funds. So the private key is ownership of your funds within cryptocurrency. So there are no Bitcoins that you can store on a jump drive or your hard drive. Rather, you are storing that public key, because whenever you go to the Bitcoin network or Ethereum and you're trying to send funds, right? So I see, hey, 00PTE, that account has a lot of funds sitting in it. I want to send them somewhere. You're going to log in and you're going to try to send those funds. And remember, you can't say, hey, I am the part-time economist, right? Because there is no one to tell that you're the part-time economist. So what you do instead is you say, I am the part-time economist, and this is the private key that proves I am the part-time economist. Now, once you enter that private key into the system, it's going to process your request. So that is the key to understanding crypto storage. Your cryptocurrency isn't stored anywhere. It's balances that are assigned to a specific person's account. The way that you gain access to those balances is through your private key. So when we talk about cryptocurrency wallets, you're not really storing cryptocurrency inside of that wallet. Rather, what is happening is that wallet is storing your private keys. So if you say, I'm storing cryptocurrency on my phone, you're really not. You're storing those private keys that give you the ability to transfer ownership around the network. And of course, there's a variety of different wallets. I'm not going to recommend or endorse any, but if you see something like this, it can be confusing because you're thinking, hey, this looks like a USB that stores files and my cryptocurrency files are on this USB, but that's really not the case. Rather, all different cryptocurrency wallets, they will hold your public key, they will hold your private key, and they will provide a way of interfacing with the blockchain. So one last thing I want to talk about, sometimes you'll say, well, I store my cryptocurrency on Coinbase or Kraken or whatever the case may be. With this, you're sending your cryptocurrency to someone else, so they have the keys, right? And what they're doing is they're giving you an IOU. So if you have your own private key, if you have the ability to actually log in to the blockchain and make a direct blockchain transaction, we call that self-custody. If someone else has the private keys, and if I send my money to Coinbase, they're gonna store it themselves. They are the ones. I might have an account, but it's not my cryptocurrency. What I'm doing is I'm sending it with them and I'm saying, hey, you have this cryptocurrency, but I've created an account, I provided my documents, and you owe me 200 Bitcoins or 1,000 Ethereum, right? I wish. You owe me that. It's not actually mine, but they owe me. So that's the thing I want to think about. And just to kind of wrap everything up, I know this can be a little bit confusing. Some people get it right away. Me, when I was first learning about cryptocurrency, it did take me a while because I was under the impression that, hey, it's like a PDF or an MP3. I just download it to my computer. But in reality, that is not the way that it works. The big takeaway here, cryptocurrency ownership is much more like writing a check from your bank account than it is actually having coins in your wallet. With cryptocurrency, that private key that is assigned to your account, that is your way of accessing your funds. That is ownership. And when we say ownership or storage of cryptocurrency, what we are really referring to is how are you storing that private key? If you are the only one that has that private key, maybe you've written it down or you've got the private key stored on your computer, we would call that self-custody. you would say, I'm storing my crypto on your computer because that's where your private key is. You have your private key on a ledger. You would say, I store my crypto on a ledger because that private key is on a ledger. And then, of course, if you store it with someone else, that would be a custodial solution in which they are the ones that have the keys to your crypto. So just to wrap things up, I know that's a little bit longer video and it's kind of a complex topic, but I hope this made it more understandable. I hope you enjoyed the video and I will see you next time.